I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, from taxes to tolls to rate hikes, the government's thirst for your money is unquenchable. Also,
our overall goal is to help address the trauma caused by gun violence.
King County announces a new regional office to fight, quote, gun violence. And once again, the media fails to learn its lesson on the art of wartime disinformation. That and more coming up today on Undivided. You can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Happy Wednesday to all of you. We're going to do something we've never done on the show before, because I have a trio of stories so frankly unbelievable that I got to get right to my favorite personal segment, Unfreaking Believable. Absolutely no end to Washington State government's desire to take more of your money. Even at a time when inflation is high, when working class people are really struggling, they just keep coming to you for more cash. And they're going to continue to do it until you say no. They're going to continue to do it until you vote them out of office, because they don't care what you think. They don't care how hard you're struggling. They don't care that overall new taxes are deeply unpopular in Washington State, even though it is a fairly progressive state. The reason I wanted to start with this today and Unbelievable is because we just talked on the show yesterday about how King County Executive Dow Constantine is saying that the county is going to be in some dire fiscal situation if state lawmakers don't allow him to raise your property taxes even quicker than they are now. The headline we showed you yesterday, King County warns of dramatic fiscal situation if cap on property taxes doesn't change. And what King County Executive Dow Constantine said is, hey, we're going to face like a $50 million deficit if state lawmakers don't change a law that was passed by the voters in 2001 saying that there is a limit on the amount per year they can increase your property taxes. Voters in 2001 said they wanted that to go from 6% to 1%. And so that is what has happened. And I mean, I would say that people are still really struggling under the weight of property taxes here, but there is a 1% limit on increases. So Dow Constantine said, hey, state lawmakers, you need to fix this. We need to be able to increase people's property taxes at an even higher rate. And what did he say would be the consequence if they did not do that? He said, well, we'll have to cut programs for public safety. We'll have to cut public health programs. We might even have to cut election workers if you don't allow us to tax people more. So right after we do that segment yesterday, what do we see as a pressing issue? So Dow Constantine and King County might come to you next year asking for more money, not for one of the things, the critical issues that he says they'll have to cut money for if they can't raise your property taxes. They want to come to you for $1 billion to fight climate change. The headline from our friends at the Center Square, King County moves on potential $1 billion property tax hike for climate action. Says King County voters may see a new climate levy lid lift on their ballots next year as county officials begin discussions to increase revenue to reduce climate impact efforts. The new motion would request King County Executive Dow Constantine develop funding options to generate $1 billion in funding over a 6 to 9 year period. Funds would be used for greenhouse gas reduction efforts and response to climate impacts. I mean, you just got done telling us that you're in such a dire fiscal situation that you might have to make cuts to public safety and public health and election workers, yet apparently not so dire that you're willing to go to the voters of King County and say, hey, can we have $1 billion to reduce the climate impacts? Meanwhile, you're already spending tens of millions of dollars, as we pointed out on the show yesterday, for quote-unquote climate justice initiatives. And I mean, we went through the budget. We took 5 minutes to go through the budget and found hundreds of millions of dollars that you could easily cut from the budget, but you won't, because it's not about budget cuts. It's not about what do we need or not need to spend money on. It is about how can we get the most possible money from people so we can fund pet projects, one of which I'll talk about later on in the show, which is absolutely absurd. So right after, dramatic fiscal situation. Oh, hey, we're going to come to you and we want $1 billion to fight climate change. Get real. So I said this is a trifecta of stories. We were going to talk about this on the show yesterday, but we had such a jam-packed program that I figured we'd discuss it today. So the toll rates, especially in the, what do you call them, Nicole? You take them every day sometimes. Well, not every day. You try not to.
The hot express lanes. Or the hot
express lanes. Are those interchangeable?
I think so. I don't know if hot that's lanes, official, but that's
express lanes.
And I don't take them every day because I refuse to pay
because
that much.
Because they're expensive.
Yes.
They're expensive. They can go up to $10. Yeah. And as we know, they are often at $10 for and the, and that's why we call them, what do they call them? Like the
I do think
the Lexus lanes or something.
Hot lane.
No, there's like a phrase for them because they're basically only rich people can afford. Basically, only rich people can afford to take them.
Yeah, and they're not. I do agree with this notion that they're not moving that fast.
Yeah,
but I don't know that this is going to help much.
No, so let's talk about this. So they've been $10, which is already very expensive for, again, working class people. Well, here's a story from Fox 13. WashDOT eyes $15, $18, and even no maximum toll prices for the I-405 corridor. So there was a meeting of the Washington State Transportation Commission, which I'll just tell you right now, was 6.5 hours long. See, this is why you pay us $5 a month to be subscribers. So we watch a 6.5 hour long transportation meeting so you don't have to. And I will tell you, the conversation around whether to increase tolls and by how much came at the 4 hour mark. They're really burying that thing in there behind a lot of important stuff. So as they point out at this meeting, they talk about the necessity to increase, to set the maximum toll rate higher. And they say that it's because the toll lanes, as they are right now, they're already hitting that max of $10 an hour on a regular basis. Here's a clip from the State Transportation Committee meeting.
We are seeing these facilities hitting the maximum rate of $10 on 405 and $9 on SR-167 on a rather frequent basis.
So they're basically saying these lanes, which are meant to reduce congestion, aren't really having that effect because so the way they gauge that is, can you go 45 miles an hour in those lanes? And so they're saying that in some points, in some directions of travel, like 70-something% of the time, it's at the peak and you're not even going 45 miles an hour, even if you're paying the peak of $10 an hour. So they're saying that's the justification here, right? But I will point out, do you remember back when they set these rates initially? And when they said, you know, the peak is going to be $10, but remember they said that it probably won't hit $10 very often. Like that's going to be an exceptional circumstance. But it became apparent pretty much immediately that that wasn't the case, that the state was just wrong and that it was going to hit $10 an hour or $10 for a ride on those lanes a lot. In fact, I pulled a Seattle Times article from 2015, the headline, $10 toll on I-405 raises big questions. It says tolls on the new Interstate 405 express lanes hit $10 on Thursday and traffic was still bogged down. Relentless congestion raises questions about whether the new Linwood to Bellevue toll corridor is properly designed and whether demand exceeds state planning. So really, from the very beginning of this, it was poorly planned out. From the very beginning of this, they failed to recognize that what they had done and where they were going to set it wasn't actually going to reduce congestion at all, but it was going to put an awful lot of money into state coffers. So anyway, now they're proposing a two-phase increase. So one of the phases will take place in 2024, and then a next phase in 2025. And at this meeting, they discussed, and they're putting forth to the commission, okay, we have a couple proposals. We have one that would cap it at 15 in the first phase, so 2024. And then we have another proposal that would cap it at 12. But as soon as they put that option forth, there were individuals on the commission who said, why are we even considering $12 an hour? Not why do I keep saying $12 an hour? Why are we even considering $12 to use the lanes? And not because they think that's too high, because they think that that won't make a bit of a difference. So here's that clip.
Increasing the minimum toll rate to 50 cents on 167 and 75 cents on 405, the current minimum rates, to $1 on both facilities. And increasing the maximum rate on 167, which is $9 and $10 on I-405, to $15 on both facilities. Or alternatively, looking at a $12 maximum rate if there's interest in assessing that option as well.
What does $12 do? We understand, I understand it doesn't move the dial. So why is it even up there? I want to know.
We did have a request. It wasn't in the letter, just to clarify. It wasn't in the letter, but we did have a follow-up request from Senator King. Senator King asking to include the 12. So from a performance standpoint and from a revenue standpoint, we're still waiting some finalized analysis on that, but it does not move the needle from what we've seen in any significant way on either traffic management or on revenues.
Yeah, and you can think about that how you want. Does it make sense to put forward a proposal that's not actually going to ease traffic or meet their traffic management goals? No, but they did it anyway because a Republican state senator, Curtis King, as I'm assuming who they're referencing there, said, hey, capping it at $15 is like a 50% increase. So why don't we also discuss at least the option of capping it in this first phase at 12? Now, look, all of this would be fine. I mean, it's not fine. It's ridiculous, the state that we're in. And it's also basically forcing working class and poor people to sit in traffic while people who have the money to pay $15 and maybe, by the way, in the next phase, $18 to use the toll lanes, use those and fly by. And I think that we can talk about whether that system for a party that says that they care about the working class and the poor, we can talk about whether that is a system that is working appropriately. But here's the thing, and here's the kicker. That's not why they're doing this. They don't care if you sit in traffic. They don't care if you're in the hot lanes and you're still at a standstill and they got 10 bucks from you. They don't care. Buried in there is the reason why they're really doing this.
Why are we looking at express rate changes to 405, 167 express toll lanes today? This past summer, bids for recently awarded projects on that corridor came in significantly over cost estimates and planned funding, with the current funding gap estimated at about $275 million.
Yeah, projects came in over budget, as basically every government transportation project in this state has from now, like 20 years ago. They have no care and concern for tax dollars. They have no care and concern whether major projects come in on time and on budget, or even, God forbid, under budget. And so now they've got projects that are coming in over budget, as bloated government projects do. And so now they're going to go to you, people who are trying to commute to work, make a living, already under the stress of the price at the pump, already under the stress of inflation. They're going to be like, charge them $18. Hey, maybe even more if they don't want to sit in traffic for hours on it. The only reason we're in this situation is because the government can't plan for crap. And when they do have projects, they go woefully over budget. And of course, that falls on you. The burden of that falls on you. So don't be fooled to think, oh, they're doing this because the government, you know, wants to give you an option to not actually be sitting bogged down in traffic. No, it's because they need more money. And this is how they're going to get it. All right, story number three on the government's insatiable desire to take more of your money. We warned you that this was coming, and we got this from Crafty Grandma Crispy, one of our dedicated listeners. So you remember the whole debacle, which I thought was one of the worst cases of, I don't think it's government incompetence. I almost think it's kind of evil. Remember, we've been discussing a lot how Governor Jay Inslee lied and lied and lied and lied about the carbon tax and the fact that, of course, it would increase prices at the pump. That's what it was designed to do. But then there was Puget Sound Energy, which had come to the State Utilities Commission and said, hey, the carbon tax, we also have to increase people's PSE rights because of the carbon tax. And remember what the commission told them? The commission advised them not to include that as a line item on people's bills. And PSE, I mean, they weren't too happy about that. And now they are, and I'm actually glad Puget Sound Energy is doing this, even though the commission said, oh, no, hide this from people. So if you have PSE, if you haven't got it already, you should be getting a letter in the mail. Thank you, Crafty Grandma Crispy, for sending this. Got a letter, an insert from Puget Sound Energy in her bill. It said, starting October 1st, PSE's natural gas customers will see higher rates reflected on their monthly bills. The higher rates result from costs incurred by PSE to purchase allowances to cover greenhouse gas emissions and comply with the cap and invest program. So let there be no denial from the government, no denial from the governor's office that not only is the carbon program impacting you, yes, at the gas pump, but it's impacting you in other ways as people have to pay to comply with it. like Puget Sound Energy. So Puget Sound Energy sending a letter to its customers. So for any rates that you incur after October 1st, you're going to start to see that increase on your, and I don't know if how they're going to list it or how they're going to do that because they were told not to list it, but whether it's listed or not, you know what it's from, you know what it's, and we've reached out to Puget Sound Energy because one of the things that bothers me about this is the governor's office told us during this whole debacle and the whole back and forth, they said, well, Puget Sound Energy already sent a letter to its customers, to which I said at the time, I'm a Puget Sound Energy customer. I haven't received any sort of letter in that regard. We'd reached out to PSE at the time saying, hey, have you sent a letter out? Never heard back. And now, just now, people are starting to get a letter. So was the governor's office lying to us? Was the governor's office misinformed that PSE customers had already been told about this? Or is this letter covering their ass? Is this a letter to cover their ass? Because the governor's office said, oh, they've sent out a letter. And PSE's like, no, we didn't. But maybe we should now since the governor's office told everyone we did. So anyway, taxes, tolls, rates, it's all going up. And I'm going to talk about it in our closing sanity check, but this is a government drunk on power, drunk on the power of one-party rule, with an insatiable desire to take more of your money for their pet projects. And they're not going to stop until not only you tell them to stop, but you vote them out of office, because this is who they are as politicians. They're never going to stop taking your money, no matter what kind of pet projects they want to fund. They're going to find a way to do it. Okay, coming up next, King County Executive Dow Constantine is launching a regional gun violence prevention effort. We'll break it down and talk about whether it'll actually have an impact. But first, if you're in the market to sell your home, check out a few real estate agents, but make sure that you reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He and his team have great tools that you can use as a home seller. Their Listing Boost concierge service, in case you have any projects you need done on your home before you put it on the market, to really make sure your listing shines. We asked Wes Jones about what he would do in the first phases if you approach him about selling your home.
Oh, I think the first step is having an idea of maybe what your home is worth, you know, and having that kind of baseline home value. And that's something that we can do complimentary. You can go to the website, sellwithwes.com. You just plug in your address and we'll get you a value range. And if you want, and if you're serious, you know, I'll come out and do a quick, you know, market analysis for you. That's all complimentary. And then at that time or another time, we could walk through the basic steps of what it would take to get your home ready for the market.
Yeah, and as he mentioned there, a really good first step is just go to sellwithwes.com, and find out how much your home is worth. They have a handy home value calculator. Just plug it in, get that estimate. It might be worth more than you think. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, King County Executive Dow Constantine has launched what he's calling a regional effort and an office specifically targeted at reducing, quote unquote, gun violence, which is really gang violence, but of course they don't say that. Now I'm going to play for you. I need you to bear with me, okay? I need you to bear with me because I'm going to play a 2 minute. Is this okay, Nicole? You're the boss.
It's done.
2 minutes of Dow Constantine and making this announcement, and then I'm going to go back and individually dissect some of the things he said. So buckle up, take a deep breath. 2 minutes of Dow Constantine talking about quote unquote gun violence. Let's hear it.
For the first time in history, gun violence is the leading cause of death for children and teens in our country. The leading cause of death. It's heartbreaking. It's tragic. It's also outrageous and unacceptable. The solutions to gun violence are complex, but they require collective action and a shared commitment to ensure that every community is safe. That's why today I am announcing the launch of the Regional Office of Gun Violence Prevention. The office will be housed within Public Health, Seattle and King County, because we know that gun violence is to a significant degree a preventable public health issue, one that we must work together to treat and to cure. The Regional Office of Gun Violence Prevention will work with community leaders, those of you here today, and many more, to expand on evidence-based, community-centered gun violence prevention strategies. Our overall goal is to help address the trauma caused by gun violence and, in turn, to prevent the cycle of violence from repeating. The office will focus on our violence prevention efforts and focus them all in one place. expand our violence intervention programs to new communities, and I will talk about those in a moment. And connect us with the White House Office of Violence Prevention so that we can leverage more federal resources for this important mission. 2 years ago, King County began partnering with community organizations already conducting violence prevention and community resilience work, creating a unique model of intervention, prevention, and restoration services. At the center of this effort are nationally recognized practices of gun violence intervention, CVI. These strategies have been, or community violence intervention rather, CVI, these strategies have been developed by community leaders across the country, and they've been informed by leaders right here in our community.
All right. So there's a reason that I played such a long clip, because I want to go through and dissect some of the things he said, because as we know, the mainstream media will not push back on some of the points that he's making. The first thing, and I just have to say it, we started hearing this claim around 2020 that, oh, children, the number one cause of death for children is gun violence. I'll just play that little clip from him again.
For the first time in history, gun violence is the leading cause of death for children and teens in our country. The leading cause of death.
Okay. So while the way he phrases it is technically true, I think it's important because there were a lot of fact checks on this claim done at the time. So people who want you to be scared of guns and want you to think that guns like just absolutely jump up on their own and kill children, they were very, very crafty in the way that they came to that that data set, is that instead of saying, okay, who's a child? Well, 0 to 17 technically would be a child, 18 plus would be an adult. They used data only for kids aged 1 all the way up to 19. So they included 18 and 19-year-olds, and they excluded infants, which have their own unique set of challenges health-wise that lead to some fatalities, right? And so only when you look at that exact data set, 1 to 19 would fire or whatever be the leading cause of death. So if you take away 18 and 19-year-olds and you include youth 0 to 1, babies 0 to 1, then it would be car accidents. And so they're very creative in the way that they use that, and it's all to make a point about guns. But, okay, so let's talk about this cut. Dow saying that, talking about the solutions to gun violence.
The solutions to gun violence are complex, but they require collective action.
Yeah, you don't know the solutions to gun violence, clearly, Dow Constantine, because you've been in office for 4 terms. So if you've been hiding the solutions that you think will work to deal with our quote-unquote gun violence problem, then shame on you for the past 15 years, because now we have people dying on our streets at record numbers. So don't pretend that you know the solutions to this, because if you know the solutions and you're hiding them, then you're just a bad person. All right, let's take a look at another little piece of his spiel.
Our overall goal is to help address the trauma caused by gun violence and in turn to prevent the cycle of violence from repeating.
Yeah. A really good way to reduce the trauma is to actually put people in prison who commit crimes, who commit drive-by shootings, who shoot at each other, who are engaged in violent gang activity. That's a really good way to reduce the trauma of victims. We also know that a small number of people, gang members, are responsible for a large percentage of the crimes that are being perpetrated with guns in our community. I would also note there at the end where he's saying we need to reduce the cycle. I'm not disagreeing that there is a cycle of this, and a lot of it is tied to gangs, and there's a cyclical nature of when young men grow up in a household, maybe with an absent father or a father who is a gang member, that they'd be more likely to become a gang member themselves. But one of the ways to interrupt that cycle, again, is to make sure youth know and believe that there are consequences. I was reminded of this clip from Como News where there was a teenager in court for that string of attacks on elderly Asian Americans, and he was shocked at the fact that despite the seriousness of his alleged crimes, he wouldn't get out on house arrest.
Can't get house arrest? You let people out who shoot at people get house arrest.
Yeah, and so you want to know how to reduce the cycle? You don't have young kids like that. I think he was 16 years old, believing that he could allegedly commit such a serious series of crimes and walk out of jail the same day. That's what's going on because of the mentality of Dow Constantine and other progressive, this hands-off criminals approach. You don't think that that is a big part of the problem that we have? Also, he in this in this announcement, here's Dow Constantine again, the head of a county that's dealing with a major, major crime surge. Seattle is this close to breaking its record for the year for homicides. And he's in this announcement bragging about the work they've already done.
2 years ago, King County began partnering with community organizations already conducting violence prevention and community resilience work, creating a unique model of intervention, prevention, and restoration services.
Okay, 2 years into that, how's that working? How is that unique model working? If you started something to focus on this 2 years ago, you should probably abandon it. Because at this point, I think it's pretty clear. I hate to laugh. I always have to laugh at these ridiculous things. But if you started it 2 years ago and these are the results we're seeing, you should probably abandon ship and try something else. And that leads me to be very concerned that this new office is just going to be a money suck. He talked about how this is going to be a regional approach to the problem.
I am announcing the launch of the Regional Office of Gun Violence Prevention. The office will be housed within Public Health, Seattle and King County, because we know that gun violence is, to a significant degree, a preventable public health issue.
So a regional office of gun violence led by King County, is that going to have better results than the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, which we were promised several years ago was going to be the end-all, be-all to homelessness in Washington State? At one point, they said that they were going to basically have zero homeless individuals living in downtown Seattle. And what do we have to show for it? Obviously not zero homeless individuals living in downtown Seattle. We've poured hundreds of millions of dollars into a regional homelessness authority that has done nothing except earn the condemnation and the criticism of people across the political spectrum. And now we're to believe that a regional office to combat gun violence is going to do a damn thing except waste even more taxpayer money and give money to organizations, outside organizations, because it makes you feel good, you know, for equity reasons, when we've already seen that programs like that that got funded by King County in 2020, in 2021, have had no accountability for where that money is spent, have had no accountability for the outcomes. Are they actually helping young men in particular avoid the gang lifestyle? In fact, we're going to have on the show tomorrow, King County Councilman Reagan Dunn talking about, you know, he's been asking for audits for some of these equity programs and initiatives that got millions of dollars in taxpayer handouts in 2020. I mean, there was a woman who ran one of them who ended up in prison for embezzling money and for spending it on a lavish lifestyle. And Reagan Dunn still can't get the state auditor to agree to do an audit because, oh, you can't do an audit on social justice programs. So I'm sorry, with the track record of King County on how they've spent money, how they failed to oversee it, on social justice initiatives. There's no way in hell it's going to be any different when you create an entire office dedicated to it. And then at the same time, you know, this is going to be a failure, just like the King County Regional Homelessness Authority was a failure. And then you've got Dow Constantine saying, oh, we have money problems. Where is all this money going? Well, this is an emergency situation. You guys, this is freaking ridiculous. This is crazy. And the reason I know this is going to fail is how many times have I said, don't trust someone to solve a problem that they refuse to properly identify? When you have an elected leader who refuses to just speak plainly about what the problem is, they are never, ever going to be able to solve it. That's the case with the King County Regional Homelessness Authority. We all know what the problem is. We know it's not a housing problem. Yet they continue to push that narrative. This is a housing problem. If only we had hundreds of millions of dollars to build a bunch of houses, then we wouldn't have a homeless crisis at all. No, it's a drug crisis. It's a mental health crisis. And of course, a regional homelessness authority that failed to recognize that and failed to acknowledge what was obvious would not be able to solve the problem. It is the same thing here. There is a lack of accountability for people who use guns to harm other human beings. We have put criminals above law-abiding citizens, and we have put criminals above police officers. Politicians in this state have done that. Now, we have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation. The police officers we do have been stripped of their ability to actually fight crime. And you wonder why we're in this situation. And you think, oh, handing out safe storage kits is going to be the solution. For the love, get this man out of office. This is crazy, crazy stuff. And this shouldn't be divisive. This, for people who want everyone, I think, I hope, wants to see fewer people killed on our streets by criminals using guns. Just like everyone wants to see, I hope, fewer people living on our streets and dying of drug overdoses with a needle in their arm on our streets. But for some reason, we can't just get together and come to some simple truths, speak simple truths about what's behind some of these crises. And if you do, you're considered right wing. Oh, no, if you're going to say homelessness is a drug crisis, right wing, Brandy, at it again. If you're going to say that we're in a crime crisis because we don't have consequences for individuals who commit crimes, we got judges letting people out with no bail only to go out and commit more acts of violence. Oh, there's right-wing Brandy spewing her pro-mega Trumpist right-wing Nazi talking points again. Fine. It's the truth. You can call me whatever you want, but it's the truth. All right, speaking of things that simply aren't working, in the city of Seattle, I have given the mayor, Bruce Harrell, credit for at least being willing to push back some of the names that he's called and do things like clear homeless encampments, like clear these open-air markets where people not only sell drugs but stolen merchandise from businesses big and small. The issue is you have to be relentless. It has to be relentless because, as our friend Jonathan Cho points out, so he sent out a picture, and Jonathan Cho has been more than any other journalist covering the woes in Chinatown and Little Saigon in Seattle and in that community. In particular, 12th and Jackson has been a blight for them. And it's been really detrimental to not only safety in the area, but also to the economy in the area for some of the small business owners there. So he, this was yesterday. He took a picture at 12th and Jackson and said, hey, the city came in, cleaned this up. There was a Seattle police cruiser parked there. He said, no sign of any tweakers or the open-air black market of stolen goods. Question now, how long will this last? Well, he obviously foresaw that it wouldn't last very long because Jonathan Cho goes back out a few hours later once the sun sets, and it is a very different scene.
It's clear during the day, but late at night, it's the same craziness.
So he goes out there hours later. It is packed with drug users. The open-air market selling stolen merchandise are back. There is just filth everywhere. I mean, this thing was clean hours earlier, and as Jonathan Cho pointed out, not a police officer in sight. What makes the city believe that you can clear something during the day, spray down the sidewalks, right, and get it all clean, and then during the night is when you pull all those resources out of the area and things will be fine? That makes no sense. And Jonathan Cho, while he was back down there, I believe this was yesterday evening, he chatted with some folks who were back squatting and looked like maybe getting ready to do some drugs.
Got some baseball cards there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I heard the church came and gave some donations and all that, some food. Did you guys get some food?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is this a safe spot for you guys?
I mean, for now.
For now? Doing your best to stay away from the Fetty?
What Fetty? I got food. Huh?
You got food?
Yeah, yeah.
You got to get food and foil. Whoa. Good combo out here.
What foil?
All right, be safe, guys. I'm just checking. Hey, Zap, much love, bro. I'll come right back, all right? Man, so much trash down here, guys.
Like, in a span of hours. I love Jonathan Cho, though. He just is so brave. And he's going in there and he knows some of them by name. And they're like, oh, what Fetty? We don't have fentanyl. And they're like, we just have food. He's like, oh, and the tinfoil and the needle right there. And he's just zooming in on it, which is just ridiculous. But look, I mean, clearing these areas is a good thing, right? But you have to do it relentlessly. I actually am of the belief, and I know I'm a limited government kind of person, and this might kind of be contrary, I think the National Guard should be down there. I think the National Guard should be in downtown Seattle. I think they should be in areas like this, and I think they should simply be on each block standing there, because I do think a visible presence, I mean, Jonathan Cho points out one of the common denominators he sees is there is not a police presence at night in these areas. Well, it's because we don't have enough officers. They're out there responding to life or death emergencies, to near record levels of homicides and shootings. So they don't really have time or the resources to be able to put an officer stationary on corners like 12th and Jackson and 3 and Pine. So I don't want to be the person that's like, oh, bring the government in, bring the military in. But they did it down in California. I think it was in San Francisco. Didn't even Gavin Newsom say, hey, we need the National Guard here. And I'm not saying they got to be armed to the hilt and it has to feel like there's a military presence on the streets. But I'm telling you what, you go down there and for weeks on end, you tell them, no, get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of here. Clean it up. Clear it out. Arrest people, especially the drug dealers, because in my eyes, they're just potential murderers, the gang members who are down there. And then you create an environment that is hostile to that climate. That's what we need. We need an environment that is hostile to people who break the law. And then they decide, hey, let's go to Portland. Let's go somewhere else because Seattle's not having it anymore. That's what we need. And I get it that some people, they're arrested on these low-level crimes and they get kicked out right away. Fine. Arrest them and then have them get cut loose right away. It still disrupts them for a few hours. It makes their life miserable. And if you do that enough time, do it 30 times in a day for all I care. And get it to the point where they're like, okay, we can't do this. We can't do this here. We can't do business here. We got to go somewhere else. So anyway, thank you to Jonathan Cho for documenting that, because it's one thing. The city will be like, hey, we went and cleaned that up. And then nobody goes back and nobody goes a few hours later to see that, yeah, it was cleaned up for like 2 hours, except Jonathan Cho. And that is why we love him. All right, we will get to some national news and the absolute failure of the media, both nationally and internationally, to learn lessons from the war in Ukraine. I mean, there are so many lessons as a media ecosystem that we should have learned from the war in Ukraine and the Russian invasion that we have apparently already forgotten. So we'll get to that coming up next. But first, I've been preaching First Mark Insurance. Mike and I are members of the First Mark family. And you might have been asking yourself, okay, is First Mark Insurance right for me? You know, maybe you're like, I'm not some wealthy person who has a million different assets that they have to insure. But the great thing about First Mark is that they are going to tailor, they're going to talk to you about your needs, and then they're going to go out and shop the market, and they're going to get you only what you want, nothing more, and they're going to do it at a price that's in your budget. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, talked about who their ideal customer is.
Our client is anybody that values advice and wants to have a partner in their insurance buying decision and in helping them manage those accounts moving forward. So it can be as simple as someone that owns a car and rents an apartment to the uber wealthy that have assets all across the world that we need to insure. So we really, what's most important for us is somebody that values this partnership and wants to have us guide them through it.
Yeah. So I valued it. Mike and I valued it a lot. We learned a lot from doing the First Mark Challenge. We came to them with our insurance and we were kind of trying to meld our lives together at that point. So I had my insurance. Mike had his insurance. We're like, we got to bundle this together. We were really underinsured and just confused. I'll be honest. Insurance is confusing. I didn't understand it at all. So they took us through the process. They shopped the market for us, came back. We got much better insurance for the same price we were paying previously. And now it's housed by a local company that we can call up if we have an issue. I mean, no brainer. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State momentarily. I want to focus this segment really on the failure of the media to cover what's happening in the Middle East. And, you know, I talked about this, I think it was it yesterday or Monday? It was Monday. Wow, the days fly by. We went through meticulously some of the local media coverage of protests here and how it was just very inadequate, but also very biased. And it really shocks me. You remember when Russia invaded Ukraine? There was all sorts of government propaganda on both sides, frankly. There were all sorts of videos and disinformation and misinformation put out because, you know, you're fighting the war, you know, on the ground, but you're also fighting a war for people's minds and people's hearts. And you want, you know, on the world stage. And so, of course, Russia and Ukraine were both working overtime to try to get their side to look sympathetic. And part of that played out on social media. And there were several instances in the early days of the Russian invasion where the media was caught looking absolutely foolish because they went with something on social media because maybe they wanted to believe it. And then it just turned out to be propaganda. And so I guess I'm maybe not shocked, but I'm kind of disappointed that especially the larger media outlets, the national outlets, and the international outlets, didn't remember what happened with the invasion of Ukraine and really approach everything they saw on social media with a grain of salt until they could absolutely verify it. And so you have probably heard the headlines and saw the headlines that there was news that Israel bombed a hospital in Gaza. Israel bombed a hospital in Gaza where civilians were seeking refuge. And there were people, including members of Congress, Rashida Tlaib, who immediately globbed onto that. And they were so quick to believe it. And Nicole, you looked. Are these are still up?
Yes, these tweets still and up, and she has not.
That is insane, because we'll get to kind of what, you know, how this story has fallen apart. She said Israel just bombed the Baptist hospital, killing 500 Palestinians, doctors, children, and patients, just like that. POTUS, this is what happens when you refuse to facilitate a ceasefire and help de-escalate. Your war and destruction only approach has opened my eyes and many Palestinian Americans and Muslim Americans like me. We will remember where you stood. And then she was retweeting people who were saying that basically this was a fact. This was just a matter of fact that Israel bombed this hospital. One tweet she retweeted said, Israel using the most advanced weapons technology just struck the Ali Hospital in Gaza City. And initial reports say 500 patients and doctors and nurses were killed. And they took out vital humanitarian infrastructure. So she's like, this is a fact. Early reports, this is an absolute fact. Israel using the most advanced weapons system targeted this hospital, bombed it, 500 people, if not more, are dead. And it really didn't take long for this story to start to fall apart. But this is where I go to the inability of the media to just pause and to try to confirm. And outlets as critical as the Associated Press. So we've talked about that's a wire service, right? So there are thousands of news organizations that rely on the Associated Press for coverage of national and world events. And that's why if the Associated Press gets a headline wrong or gets something wrong, thousands of media outlets also get it wrong, because they just simply take that story and they put it out there and they host it on their websites and they talk about it on the air. So it's a big deal when the Associated Press gets something wrong. And so what was the Associated Press headline? Israel bombs Gaza where civilians sought refuge. Again, that there's no like effort to couch it in this is what Hamas is saying, this is what, you know, the UN is saying, nothing. They're just like, this happened, Israel bombs Gaza. And so then you had outlets like Como News, which of course Como News in Seattle doesn't have some reporter over in Gaza. This is an Associated Press wire story, and their headline, at least 500 people were killed after an Israeli airstrike hit a hospital in Gaza City. So you can see how the faulty reporting spreads so quickly from an international level to a national level and to local newsrooms all across the country. And at this hour, Como News still has that tweet up, which is kind of crazy, because people have pointed out to it like, hey, guys, this isn't accurate. And again, it's because they were fed it by the Associated Press. And then you saw, and the Associated Press, you know, has since changed its headline, but for instance, the New York Times, they had to alter their headline. And you saw from the initial headline to more recent versions of their headline how slowly they were trying to roll back their reporting. But you can't, in today's day and age, put the toothpaste back in the tube. Not in the internet era, which has been the era for like 20 years, and you should know that by now. So their initial headline, Israeli strike kills hundreds in hospital, Palestinians say. And then they kind of softened that, at least 500 dead in strike on Gaza hospital. So they called it a strike, Palestinians say. They didn't specifically have Israel in the headline anymore. A third iteration, and I actually think there's been four or five iterations at this point, at least 500 dead in blast at Gaza hospital, Palestinians say. Now they call it a blast and not a Israeli strike. But of course, the truth is much different. And I'll admit, you know, we're sitting here, I'm not over in Gaza, you know, viewing the wreckage. But now, you know, with daylight, there has been more images out that show that maybe this blast, wasn't even as nearly as deadly as it was made out to be by Hamas, which, of course, Hamas would have kind of a reason to say Israel bombed a hospital and killed 500 people. And you think someone in the media would be like, hey, this is what Hamas is saying. Maybe we should wait for more confirmation. So now, you know, it looks like a lot of this was limited to like a parking lot, essentially, and some cars, and the fatalities weren't even close to 500. And the big caveat and the big but, it now is looking like this wasn't Israel at all, that this might have been Hamas militants and a misfired bomb that broke apart in the air and fell down in the area of this hospital. And that's obviously a much different story than evil Israel intentionally struck a hospital where civilians were hiding out in Gaza. And Ben Shapiro, I think, you know, echoed really our sentiments about the local media's coverage of this issue. He said, so just to be clear about this, Palestinian terrorists tried to fire a rocket at Israel. It fell short and hit a hospital, killing hundreds of Palestinian Arabs. Hamas claimed that it was Israel, and the media immediately ran with Hamas's story. Sounds about right. He went on to say, who wouldn't trust the genocidal Jew-hating terrorists who just murdered 1,400 civilians in cold blood and openly flaunt that they shield their weapons with civilians? And look, I think there's probably a lot of misinformation and disinformation from both sides. Again, that is part of the game now. That is part of war games in this era, unfortunately, is that you're going to have propaganda that is put out on social media and immediately disseminated to hundreds of millions of people. And of course, there's a lot of those people who are going to see it and share it, but the media shouldn't be one of them. Institutions like the Associated Press and the New York Times, those are the people who are supposed to be a barrier for misinformation and disinformation. And they're not. So who do you trust? Who? And this is something so serious. And you have a member of Congress, a current member of Congress, who still is standing by, at the very least, disputed narrative and what appears to be a completely false narrative around what happened. So who do regular news consumers who want facts and information, who do they trust? I mean, you just have to look at everything you see with skepticism, especially in a climate like this, and especially when there are so many reasons for both sides to put out information that paints them in the best possible light. It's absurd, the point that media has come to. And it's dangerous, by the way. It's incredibly dangerous. This is what manipulates the view of on the world stage of Israel and what's happening. This is the kind of stuff that can lead to decisions on whether to help, whether to send aid, etc. So it's not just as simple as, oh, they lied about it and people fell for it. No, it has life or death consequences. Life or death consequences. So shame on media outlets who still can't learn that lesson. We've had two major conflicts and an opportunity to learn that lesson, and you still can't do it. I don't know if it's laziness or bias or a little bit of both. All right, I've been talking about my success on Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, and I have a new picture to show people on the video stream today because I mentioned it yesterday. So event last year where I saw a picture of myself, I'm like, wow, I need to lose weight, and that's when I called Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. So same event this year. I look so much better and tanner, by the way. Wow, I was pale last year. I apparently let myself get a little bit of sun this summer. I mean, I'm still super pale, but you can just see, I mean, that just sells itself, right? If you're on the audio stream, I'll post this on Facebook because I'm wearing almost the same dress, not quite the same dress, but I was telling Nicole this yesterday is that I think sometimes when you're on your own little get healthy journey, it's easy to be hard on yourself and to be like, oh, I should have lost more. I should be doing more, whatever it is. And then I saw that picture. I'm like, dang, good job. Good job, me. So anyway, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. I'm so glad I started the program when I did because, one, I looked great for my wedding. I felt great. But I was giving myself at this time last year a million reasons not to do it. I'm like, oh, Thanksgiving is coming up and Christmas. I don't want to start a new program before then. But I did. And in like 2 months, I lost almost 30 pounds. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation to get your questions answered with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Okay, let's get to questions and comments from the stream today. Dennis says, hello, everyone. I join from school every day, but I've never said hello from school. How old are you? Where are you going to school? I mean, there's a lot.
And have teacher or student?
Teacher, yeah. Maybe.
I don't know.
If you're a teacher, you ought to be teaching, unless you're on your lunch break. That's fine. So we need more information, Dennis. But welcome. We're happy to have you here and happy to have you join the conversation. On tolls and the possibility that in a couple years we could be paying $18 if we want to take the express lanes on 405 or 167. Absurd. Kathy says, we pay for the roads and now they want us to pay tolls and let us not forget tax the gas that they tack on. Show me where all this money is going. I know they also talked about taxes on miles we drive. Yeah, they're talking about going to a pay-per-mile system instead of relying on the gas tax, although I don't trust them to get rid of the gas tax. I can see them doing both.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't trust them. I don't trust them at all. And yeah, that's the issue. Like I said it yesterday, if we had a lean and mean government, and I was like, yeah, they're really doing the most with what we give them, I would feel differently every time they come to us asking for more money. But that's not the case. Very clearly, that's not the case. When you have King County saying that they want to go to taxpayers and ask for $1 billion to fight climate change while they're simultaneously spending tens of millions of dollars on climate justice projects, for the love. You get rid of every single program, every single job that has the word equity in it, and then we can have a conversation. All right, Steve said, can't afford the current discriminatory fee, conveniences for the rich. Roger, I thought when I bought a vehicle, I was taxed on the price of the vehicle. Then when I bought tabs that help pay for roads and drive on them, then when I bought fuel, the taxes were to fix and make new roads and I could drive on them. So now they want you to pay more to drive on the roads you've been triple taxed on. Yes. Yes.
It's pretty wild.
Yep. Keep giving them money. Are any of you, I'm really curious, in the I won't pay to update my car tabs club? Are you?
Well, I pay for tabs.
So you're not. You're not in the... So there is a whole, like group of people, I'm pretty sure, because I've heard it a couple times in comments, who are like, no, we wanted $30 car tabs. We didn't get them, so I'm not going to pay for them.
Right, and you can't pull anyone over for just having expired tabs, so you can... Yeah.
The only way you could get in trouble for it is if you're parked and you can get a ticket.
Which there's a car back here
that
has a ticket on it about every other week.
For expired tabs.
Yeah.
So if any of you are in that club saying, like, I'm not going to... And honestly, if you did get pulled over for something secondary and then they're also like, hey, your tabs are expired, and you told a police officer in the state, yeah, I'm not paying for them because we voted how many times for $30 car tabs? I bet you they'd say, okay. I bet you they'd get a little wink, wink, and then let you on your way. Okay. Chris says that's the commission also stated they need additional income to pay for cost overruns, which that comment probably came before we played that clip. TZ Burton says the goal of the Green New Deal is to make living so expensive that you're forced to lower your standard of living and be forced into 15-minute smart prison cities.
That's kind of scary.
That's probably true.
Where we're going.
Dow Constantine on his being money hungry. Kim Taylor says, running out of money, open a new department and hire a bunch of staff. Makes sense. I didn't even mention that. Yeah. He says that they're in a budget like emergency. And he's like, I'm going to start a whole new regional office for gun violence, where we're going to put forth a bunch of feel good programs and dish out a bunch of money for equity initiatives and not actually solve anything at all. Mark my word. That is going
to
be the
case.
And
it's funny, too, because one of the guys, we didn't pull this cut, but he said in order to get guns out of the hands of these men, he called them his words, we need to put something else in their hands. Wait, so we have to trade? We have to, like, say, okay, we don't want you to kill anybody, so we're willing to give you what?
Money?
Education? I don't know.
I'm okay with some of that.
Well,
if you want to give them a trade.
You can encourage education. You can encourage these things, but you can't say,
you're going to bribe a gang member?
Right. You need to learn to be a good person regardless of what you're given in return, right?
Yeah.
You just give goodness.
Well, I haven't heard it, but I'm assuming it was kind of a metaphor. Like, hey, we need to help them find a different trajectory in life than gang violence, which I agree with. But how many years?
Here's the thing.
How many years? That's not a brilliant suggestion.
Right.
That is not groundbreaking stuff. That is something that's been talked about for decades and decades is, hey, we need to give these young men something else to look forward to in life. We need to make sure that they don't go down the path of gang violence, right? That's not some inspirational brand new idea. We've been talking about for years, so what are you doing? What have you been doing for the last 30 years is that has been a point of conversation extensively since the 90s. Like, of course we want to do that. And then Dow Constantine has the nerve to brag about things they've already been doing when we're on a trajectory like this, when it comes to shootings and to homicides, whatever you're doing ain't it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could talk, yourself in circles about, oh, we need to help these young men. What are you doing to help them? And part of helping a young man get off a bad path is to showing him that there are consequences to that bad path that are so severe to your life that you are motivated to go a different direction. How dumb? I mean, I'm serious. How dumb are you? I know the show is called Undivided, but the only way we can be undivided is if we stop relying on absolute morons to craft our public policy and to keep us safe. These people, I mean, they're not a brain cell. Not, and when I said, how dumb are you? Not you. I know you're very smart. How dumb are they?
I know it's frustrating, but with my pointing out that comment, I think that this is what we're teaching children. I mean, we're teaching children that hard work doesn't mean anything, that you don't need to earn what you receive.
Yes.
You don't need to, like, it's all up to somebody else to give you or to supply something for you, or, like, it's your right, you're entitled.
You're a victim.
You're a victim. It's, your ancestors set you up for this, and so we should – you know, somehow repay that. And it's just crazy to me.
And that they don't see it.
Well, and their parents don't see it. Like parents, grandparents, the people that are enabling this behavior don't see that this is not helping the problem by any means.
You preach to these young people that society is holding them down and holding them back. Mm-hmm. You preach to them that that every system we have in this country is working against them. That because of the color of their skin, something they cannot change, mm-hmm. they are being held back by society. You think that that's going to what? What do you think their response to that as young people is going to be? That, okay, well, there's nothing I can do. I am trapped in this skin and there's nothing I can do because everything is working against me. Mm-hmm. So why would I try? It's crazy. And unless they have a figure at home that is telling them, no, don't believe what Dow Constantine, don't believe what Jay Inslee, don't believe what the Democrats in Olympia tell you. You can achieve whatever mm-hmm. you want to achieve. You have to work hard. You have to earn what you get. And so it's crazy to me that is, and they think it's like some righteous message.
I know.
To consistently force feed into these young people that they are victims and that they'll always be victims because of an immutable characteristic they can't change about their lives. Right. I mean, for the love.
And they're not, none of them see the good. There's nobody that I am struggling. You know, I have a friend that has a son that's a problem right now, and he is almost 18 and she's, you know, about ready to kick him out because he's a problem right now, and he has no acknowledgement of everything he's given by living at home, right? So it's been very hard for her to say, you know, this is a consequence to this, because you're still providing them a home, right? So they've always got it good even when you try to make it not as good. And he's like weeks away from 18 and he's just now, like, she's took away his car and said, by the way, at 18, like, this is my car again. It's not yours. And things like that are starting to pile up. And he just had this, I mean, it's been a hell of a couple of years for her. And just this week has made this like little revelation that, oh, I do need parents, because he said many times that he does not need them. They don't give him anything. I mean, his phones, car, you know, computer, everything that, I mean, walks out the door and doesn't have anything. And it's just, they don't see good. They don't see, I mean, there's so many people that don't see the good in America. They don't see how lucky they are to live here. Instead, it's all how terrible this country is to them, or how terrible the people in it are to them. And it's just wild. We're not teaching kids to appreciate what they do have.
Yeah. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Yeah. They're sitting there, what are you going to do for me? What is the government going to do for me?
Yeah.
I'm the victim. What's the government going to do for me? Well, I'll tell you, that's not going to help you achieve the American dream. That's not going to pull you out of whatever situation that you're in. And that's absolutely the progressive mindset mentality that it's instilling in an entire generation of kids, and I'm scared to death about what that's going to create. Wow, we got off track. We didn't get off track. We're right on the right track we need to be on.
I
almost went and got some whiskey because I need it today. That's a lot. That just pisses me off to no end.
I move my head a lot, and I'm trying to stop doing that when I talk to you.
Why?
And in that particular case, my head was all over the place. Like, dang it, the head.
Oh, my God.
I think I move my head too much.
Janelle, I worked myself up into a frenzy. Janelle, there's no solution to the cycle of gang activity and poverty. Guns don't kill. Criminals use guns to kill. The only way to solve this is being hard on crime and drugs, strengthening our police. Teresa says, wasn't he just talking about a budget deficit? How about you just enforce the current laws and have your judges prosecute the criminals? Yeah. Lolly says, to what we are our point, too many young people have no guidance. When they commit crimes, they get no punishment. On Jonathan Cho, TZ says, no way you want military on the streets. See Banana Republics. You have to sue the city councils with bonds for the win. Each council member has to be bonded. I see what you're saying. Yeah, and look, I get it. The libertarian that lives inside of me is like, no, we don't want a military on the streets. But what are we going to do when the policing situation gets even more dire than it is? Truly, what is the plan, right? So we have the lowest number of officers we've had since the 1990s. Yeah. We clearly don't have enough officers to have a police presence, even on corners where there is daily criminal activity ruining the quality of life. So what is the alternative when officers continue to leave Seattle at a rate that the city cannot keep up with? Now we're on 3 years. We're about to be on 4 years of that with no end in sight and no legitimate recruiting plan except to try to throw money at officers from different agencies to come here when their life and their value cannot be bought with $30,000. So I don't know if there is going to be a different option other than to have some sort of force come in to try to restore order. And I'm not saying they have to step in and be military police. I think that their presence alone might be helpful.
I think that was the clarification that she was going for, was to say, I mean, you're asking for that because we're short officers. We don't have the staff for it.
They're not there. Mm-hmm. They're not there. I mean, if we had, we need a force of 1,400. That's right. How many we need to, that's how many Boston has roughly. We're about the same size. And so we need a force of around 1,400. We've lost 600. There is a point where that's not tenable. There's a point where they can't even respond to a shooting. And then what do? Then you have to take drastic measures mm-hmm. to be able to enforce basic law and order on the streets. All right. On Israel, Leah says, I'm really glad you're talking about this. Unfortunately, the damage is done. I think Tlaib doesn't care about the truth, just the propaganda. How can we expect better? You just have to vote for better. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep your own house in order to have any say that anyone takes seriously on the other house. So the fringe crazies that absolutely have no place in Congress on the Republican side, for instance, I mean, Lauren Boebert up getting felt up on camera in a movie theater, you know, harassing people and smoking, you know, all that. The fringe crazies on the right, you have to, if you're a Republican, absolutely demand that they are not fit for Congress, that they have to be replaced. And then you get to have a say in what the other house is doing, what the other side of the house is doing. And in people like Rashida Tlaib and say, hey, look, we cleaned up our own house. We got rid of the fringies. You guys need to get rid of that. That's ridiculous. And there should be more Democrats, by the way. We've been efforting some interviews with Democrats on this issue, including Democrats who are also Jewish, about what are you doing to keep that side of your party in order? What do you think about what they've been doing? What do you think about what they've been justifying? Crickets. Crickets. Mm-hmm. Let's end with one more. Sharon, a lie makes it halfway around the world before the truth gets out of bed. And that is particularly true in today's social media climate. Whew! I work myself up into a sweat being angry.
Okay. It's a little warm in here today.
It is. All right. Thank you for the questions and comments. Per the usual, let's get to our closing sanity check, although I feel like I just gave a sanity check. Let's mm-hmm. do another one. We are to the point in Washington State where the current brand of politician, the current elected leaders, the current political class, they are unchangeable. They are not going to be able to be convinced to change their ways on public safety, to change their ways on taxation, some of the things that we discussed on the show today. And why do I believe that? Well, I believe that because we have already seen the worst consequences from what they've supported, yet they still continue down the same path. So I am firmly of the belief that we are not going to see any substantial change as long as we continue down this path with the same people and the same type of people. Bob Ferguson, for instance, he is just Jay Inslee on steroids. He's going to come in. He's going to continue this trajectory we're on. He's the same thing. And so for all of you who watch the show, I think that we need to work overtime in our individual lives with the people we love, with our neighbors, trying to bring them to team sanity. And trying to articulate that to them, like, hey, no, this is not going to be changed by simply, you know, hoping that they see the light, hoping that they're like, wow, people are really struggling under the weight of all these taxes. People are dying at record levels, because they know that already. They've known that for several years. They've known and they've been warned about the consequences of their policy decisions, yet they've pushed forward anyway. So we need a new slate. We need a new... I mean, I know that it's going to be challenging to get a new party in control, and this is a blue state and it is what it is, but we need to put people in office who, from the beginning, are very, very firm that it's time to move away from the trajectory that their party has been down. You know, we've mentioned Mark Mullett, and it's no secret that I think Dave Reichert is the right candidate for the right time for Washington, but hell, if it was Senator Mark Mullett, a Democrat, I'd feel fine with that too. There are reasonable, rational Democrats out there who have been, despite facing consequences from their own party for speaking out, but despite being vilified there by their own party for speaking out, they've done it. And I think that, you know, especially if you're a Republican, which I know a lot of you are, you need to celebrate those Democrats as well and give them some positive reinforcement to say, hey, we see you. We see that you're on Team Sanity. We see that we're really on the same team, even if we belong to different political parties, and we need to come together to get the state moving in the right direction. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thanks for letting me rant a lot today. It's funny because I always see the comments, oh, Brandy's in a mood today. It's because things are not working. We'll be back on the show tomorrow at noon. And also, don't forget, we do an exclusive episode just for subscribers every Sunday. It's our show Sundays with Subscribers. We have in-depth conversations on issues that maybe aren't being talked a lot about in the mainstream media or not in the way that we discuss them. So sign up, undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. It's just $5 a month. I'll warn you, we're about to embark on a major push to add new subscribers. So I'll be asking you every day to subscribe if you're not already. We're really trying to get ourselves well positioned for 2024 and all the coverage that is going to have to come along with that to try to help get the state back on the right path. All right, we'll see you on the live show tomorrow, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and shop our merch store while you're there. Boop. Thanks, Nicole.